The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Like this, you know, to be the end game for you?
That's basically. Ultimately, it's to bring awareness and make people, you know, realize what's really going on in this country. There are a lot of things that are going on that are unjust. People aren't being held accountable for. And that's something that needs to change. That's something that, you know, this country stands for freedom, liberty, justice for all. And it's not happening for all right now.
Just something that's evolved as a philosophy in your mind, and how has this kind of progressed that you make a stand like this?
It's something that I've seen, I've felt, wasn't quite sure how to deal with originally, and it is something that's evolved. It's something as I've gained more knowledge about, you know, what's going on in this country in the past, what's going on currently. These aren't new situations. This isn't new ground. Is things that have gone on in this country for years and years and have never been addressed, and they need to be.
Colin,
will you continue, Colin, to sit? Will you continue to sit?
Yes, I'll continue to sit. I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change. And when there's significant change, and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent, and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand.
Specifically, what would you like to say?
There's a lot of things that need to change. One specifically is police brutality. There's people being murdered unjustly and not being held accountable. Cops are getting paid leave for killing people. That's not right. That's not right by anyone's standards.
Colin, so many people see the flag as kind of a symbol of military. How do you view it, and what do you say to those people?
You know, I have great respect for men and women that have fought for this country. I have family, I have friends that have gone and fought for this country. And they fight for freedom. They fight for the people, they fight for liberty and justice for everyone. And that's not happening. I mean, people are dying in vain because this country isn't holding their end of the bargain up as far as, you know, giving freedom and justice and liberty to everybody. It's something that's not happening. And I've seen videos, I've seen circumstances where men and women that have been in the military have come back and been treated unjustly by the country they fought for and have been murdered by the country they fought for on our land. That's not right. There have been situations where I feel like I've been ill-treated, yes, but this stand wasn't for me. This stand wasn't because I feel like I'm being put down in any kind of way. This is because I'm seeing things happen to people that don't have a voice, people that don't have a platform to talk and have their voices heard and affect change. So I'm in a position where I can do that, and I'm gonna do that for people that can't.
Is this the first year that you haven't stood up? Or did you do it other years, or is this the first time?
This year is the first year that I've done this.
And you did all the preseason games so far?
Yes.
Okay. The first time was noted?
Yes.
And what went on in the meeting today?
How did your
today?
Teammates respond when you explained yourself today, and what was the support like for you?
The support I've got from my teammates has been great. You know, I think a lot of my teammates come from areas where this might be a situation. Their families might be put in this situation. is something that I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, you know, I really respect you for what you're doing and what you're standing for. So to me, that's something that I know what I'm doing, what's right, and I know other people see what I'm doing is right. It's something that we have to come together, we have to unite, we have to unify and make a change.
What do you say?
I don't understand how it's the wrong way. To me, this is a freedom that we're allowed in this country. And going back to the military thing, it's a freedom that men and women that have fought for this country have given me this opportunity by the contributions they have made. So I don't see it as going about it the wrong way. This is something that has to be said. It has to be brought to the forefront of everyone's attention. And when that's done, I think people can realize what the situation is and then really affect change.
You've done it every preseason game. Are you almost relieved that it took this game and the questioning that followed to let your...
As far as what? I don't really understand what you're trying to get at.
People getting murdered by police. I mean, do you think that the scenes are sort of an indictment against police?
There is police brutality.
Yeah.
People of color have been targeted by police. Mm-hmm. So that's a large part of it. And they're government officials. They're put in place by the government. So, you know, that's something that this country has to change. There's things we can do to, you know, hold them more accountable, make those standards higher. You have people that practice law and are lawyers and go to school for 8 years, but you can become a cop in 6 months and don't have to have the same amount of training as a cosmetologist. That's insane. I mean, someone that's holding a curling iron has more education and more training than people that have a gun and are going out on the street to protect us.
Right on, right on, right on. So that was the clip for Colin Kaepernick, victim of racism, giving his thorough reasoning on the reason why he's protesting during NFL games. And, you know, I thought it was important to allow Colin to speak for himself, because so many people have twisted his words, twisted his meaning about what he's really trying to bring attention to. And I think that you can hear within those clear and concise thoughts that he shared there with the media, by the way, which they call the Fifth Estate, basically trying to, I guess, what you would call get him in a moment where he's going to contradict himself. But he stayed on code. He stayed on message. And hey, he basically laid it out. You know, this is what I'm doing this for. This is my reasoning. There is a police brutality problem here in America, and I do not feel like being a hypocrite and standing for the national anthem when the words are rung in that particular national anthem is not true for me and my people. So is everybody else on? T, are you on?
Yes.
Paradox, are you on?
Paradox is not with us yet.
Okay. So T, what did you get from the actual clip? Do you have like some kind of thoughts on it?
Well, I think I definitely agree with you. I think he was definitely very poignant in what he was saying. He was not, I mean, for instance, when one of the reporters asked him, well, did you sit in prior games prior to this? Now, he knows that had that been the case, it would have been covered prior to just recently. So, like you said, he's trying to throw in something to throw him off his game. And Colin stayed on it, man. And everything he said rings true. When he mentioned, you know, as far as training, you know, you have 6 months, police academy. I'm not sure if that's, universal or not, but when you compare that against other professions that people do go into that don't hold a gun, that is appalling when you think about it. I think that other thing that could also be addressed is, well, maybe we'll get into it later, is the patriotism for pay, which there was an investigation into that, and the DOD was found to be giving millions of dollars to the NFL to put on these patriotic displays, which cheapens it. And in fact, John McCain and another senator, I can't think of his name at the moment, actually spoke on this and were highly upset about it. So it raises a lot of questions, and it'll be interesting to see what happens from here, especially considering that Gabbert, you know, their starter, is not really doing too well. And some people are calling for Kaepernick to start. So we'll see what happens.
Just wanted to let you all know Paradise has joined the program, and let the listeners know y'all listening to Code Breakers.
Yep, this is the Code Breakers. I'm sorry, we actually jumped right into the actual commentary. But yes, this is the Code Breakers. Have T on the line. Now we have Paradox on the line, and I'm D, and we are here to discuss basically the Kaepernick effect and all the ramifications of what black protest looks like here in the current present that we're living in now in 2016. So, you know, we wanted to kind of get started with the man's words directly when he spoke to the media for the first time about this, and kind of get his full commentary on the reason why he is, you know, doing the protest. And I think that he allocated his views very, very well. He was clear. He was concise. He wasn't being basically emotional. He was very, very logical in his reasoning. So, yeah, we wanted to kind of go ahead and talk about some of the differences and different responses that this particular brother has caused throughout the ether. So, Paradox, did you get to actually hear the actual clip?
Paradox, your line is already unmuted.
Okay, we can keep it flowing. But no, I wanted to.
Okay, he dropped off
again. He dropped off? Okay.
Yeah, he seemed to be having audio issues. I don't know what's going on.
Okay. No problem. I wanted to kind of go into a little bit about what the actual protest means and what it means to NFL teams, and the reason why NFL teams are actually having this type of reaction, or the type of reaction that we're seeing from football teams and other people alike. Before we get started, I would like to give out the actual number where you can call and join the conversation. If you have anything that you would like to share with us, the number is 641-715-3660, extension 549-032. Hit *6 and 1 to comment on the air. So anytime that you want to share your thoughts, please feel free to do so. Once again, the number is 641-715-3660. Extension 549-032. Hit *6 and 1 to comment on the air. All right, so T, let's go ahead and get into this, man. So when you see people asking questions about the actual protest, and you see how the needle has moved from, we just heard what Kaepernick is saying. So very, very seldom do you hear anyone allude to what the original reason why he protests is actually about. This has turned into patriotism. You know, we don't agree with the reason why he's sitting down during the flag, but they don't have a comment about the so-called police brutality that is happening now on a daily basis, that's being shown on TV, and you have people justifying murders of black people, black children. What is your reaction when you, I know you hear people talk about it a lot, so what is your reaction when you hear people kind of go ahead and discuss this and don't actually stick to the reasoning that he is actually protesting. But it becomes about everything else instead of the actual reason why he's protesting.
Right. You pose a great question. A lot of it, to me, stems from the mainstream media. Some people have dubbed it the lamestream media, and I've even heard people, not saying that I agree with it, but I've even heard people dub the newscasters as prostitutes and correspondents, basically alluding to the fact that these people are subject to corporate interests. And so as a result, what the media must do is portray an image that is palatable, and not only palatable, but also has a brainwashing effect on the masses. Because racism, white supremacy is all about a certain comfort level amongst those who are classified as white. So therefore, the media basically sets up any number of fallacies. You know, when you go into a debate, you have various fallacies that you deal with. It could be a red herring. It could be, in this particular instance, I would say it's a straw man argument. It would introduce something that has nothing to do with the questions that were raised by the original person in order to deflect from what should be critically thought about. And that's what we're seeing. And in fact, they kind of, when I say they, I say the mainstream media kind of shot themselves in the foot once you had veterans coming out and veterans for Kaepernick supporting him and saying, hey, you know, we went over here, we fought, we died in order for this man to do what he's doing and to say what he's saying. So, you know, as this thing progresses and goes on, it'll be interesting to see how the mainstream media continues to spin the story.
Yeah, it's fascinating because once they saw that the military was coming out in droves and being like, hey, you know, we fought for the protections and we uphold the Constitution and, you know, the laws behind it, quote unquote. And, you know, with that, we fight for his right to protest. He's an American citizen. And we basically, this is what we so-called join the military for. And it's amazing that you have this contrast of thoughts that are going, just crossing each other, where basically it shut the resistance down. So the talking track that they was going to try to go ahead and go on was that he was being unpatriotic and that this was totally un-American, and just roll with it. And look who he's hurting. He's hurting veterans. But of course, if you have military people that come out in droves and say, I can't allow you to do that. I support this man. What he's doing is basically what we are fighting for. We have these freedoms in place, so we are not like North Korea. So we are not like Iraq. So we've been told. So we should allow him the right to peacefully protest. He's not hurting anyone. He made it very clear what his whole reasoning is. And hey, we stand with Kaepernick. So now, when that goes across the desk of the, you know, what I would call the racist white supremacist media machine, when they see that, they're like, oh my goodness. So we can't even hammer this with the military apparatus. We can't come out against the military if we got people that are in the military that have served, that are not all black, because you have some white people that did this too, which is very, very important by the way, by the looks of things, to give that particular protest that he's doing some momentum. So now, once he started gathering momentum, once it got past that first week, they couldn't kill the story. So then he started getting other football players involved, other brothers that felt that kind of, you know, wanting, feel like they can actually make a change, feeling like they needed to do something. And I want to get to whether we actually believe protest actually does anything in a larger scheme of things. But it's just amazing that Colin has been allowed, that he just basically caught this thing on a wave And now, within the consciousness, it is basically something that people can't ignore. It. Everybody has to actually respond to it. They have to say something about what his protest is basically enacted. So I think it's a wonderful thing. I think that do I believe that it's going to end racism, white supremacy? No, I don't believe that it would end racism, white supremacy. Do I think that it would help a lot of victims become less confused about racism? Yes, and in that I stand in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick. I appreciate what he's doing. I'm with him 1,000%. That's how I feel about it. So I want to play the second clip to kind of get to the resistance part of the Kaepernick effect. And this is the no longer racist suspect. She has already declared herself a racist, in my eyes anyway. Tommy Loren, very, very popular, young, racist, white woman that tend to get irritated when these things happen. And I think that she has some interesting things to say about Kaepernick. So, Mr. Reed, if you're ready to go ahead and cue that up, we can kind of cue that up really, really quick and then, do some commentary on her, ridiculous ideas once we come back.
Hi, I'm Tommy. Welcome back for Final Thoughts. Now, I'd be happy to let this Kaepernick thing go. I've said my piece. 61 million people heard me loud and clear. But turns out this thing has extended beyond one selfish little baby. Role models exist in many forms. Kaepernick is a special case. He's inspired other sports stars and role models to disrespect the country and our symbols of pride and freedom. High five, buddy. I hope you feel good inside. For those that think I won't criticize soccer star Megan Rapinoe because she's white, well, think again. Sunday night in Chicago, Rapinoe decided not to stand for the national anthem either. It was a little nod to our buddy Kaepernick. Rapinoe is gay, so she knows what it's like to be disrespected by our nation, so she's going to kneel for the anthem from now on and hopes to really get this conversation going. Okay, Megan, let me help you with the conversation. You look at that flag and hear our anthem and it disgusts you, huh? Because the United States of America doesn't respect your liberties as a gay person? Hey, Megan, do you know what they do to women and gay people in many countries around the world? They stone them and throw them off buildings. This nation, the Stars and Stripes, you don't stand for? Yeah, there are men and women overseas fighting under that flag against enemies that would kill people like you. Remember that while you take a knee. In fact, I'd like to share a story with you, Megan and Colin. This weekend, I was at the USC-Alabama game. Americans coming together of every race, religion, and background to watch a good old American college football game. Well, after the game, a young lady approached me in tears. Why? Well, during the national anthem, a group of black women in front of her were sitting, oh, but not just sitting, laughing during the anthem. When she asked them to show some respect, they looked at her with disgust and said, "You don't know what black people go through in this country." Well, fair enough, but here's the deal. They don't know what she's been through. Her boyfriend, a Navy SEAL, just returned from deployment. He lost one of his teammates in Iraq. See, that flag and that anthem might mean a little something different to people like that. It's more than a cloth and a song. It's a symbol of those that have sacrificed for those stars and stripes in that anthem. This is the Kaepernick effect taking root. Like it or not, kids, hell, even adults, look up to athletes like Kaepernick and Rapinoe. When they choose to make a political statement by disrespecting the country, well, they send the message that somehow it's noble or righteous to sit during the anthem, or worse, laugh through it. It's sickening. I might not know what it's like to be a black American or a gay American in this country, but I know what it's like to be an American. And I know we have the right to sit and laugh at the anthem, but just because you have the right to do it doesn't make it right. And no matter how many diss songs you write about me, no matter how many names you call me or threats you place on my head, I will stand and speak up for the United States of America, not because I am exceptionally brave, but because I stand and speak for those that are. God bless America. From Dallas, good night and take care.
Wow. So what you think about that, T? What you got to say about the no longer racist suspect, Tommy Loren?
Well, she certainly brought out the red herring, didn't she? Threw in what's the lady's name? Rapinoe?
Say what?
What's the soccer player's name? Megan Rapinoe?
Yeah.
That's your red herring. She took something that had nothing at all to do with.
She broke code.
The original cause. Yeah, she broke code.
Yeah. She broke code. She broke out of whiteness for a minute, and she was trying to remind her, "Hey, don't forget what team you're on." Basically,
right, exactly. Yeah.
You're on our team. You're not supposed to be doing this. You know, you may be gay, you may be broke. I don't care what you may be toothless, but you are still under the guise of being white, and that means something. So she had almost like a mental break. I mean, she was frustrated, and she's young too. So anybody that's out there to think that this is a problem of the older generation, people 40 and up, you're sadly mistaken. There are full-blown millennials and younger that believe in racism, white supremacy, that's willing to fight and die for white supremacy, and that will uphold it to the end. And Tommy Lauren has made her living off basically upholding the system of racism, white supremacy. Now, I'm sorry, go ahead. What were you about to say?
Well, and I was going to say, and under the system, who knows if Megan Rapinoe was instructed or somehow directed to do what she did in order to actually take away from Kaepernick's protest and message. I mean, we don't know.
You mean sort of like a diversion tactic to get it away from the message?
Yeah, exactly. Diversionary tactic. I mean, how we don't know.
This is Scotty, the engineer. I'm trying to see, who do we have on line 202? Is that Paradox?
Yes, me.
Okay.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Greetings.
Did you get to hear? Well, first, I would like to get your comments from the first clip. I know you heard it already before, so if you want to give your comments on the first clip, and then we can kind of get into Tommy Lauren a little bit, and then move along.
I probably need to hear it again, but I honestly can't remember. This is the one where he first.
This is the original, his original thoughts and comments about the reason why he's protesting. He gave his reasoning. This is like when he first started, and of course they had the little press conference there, and they was trying to get him jammed up, and he stood tall and represented like a counter-racist soldier that he is. In fact, I hope that he's listening to Black Talk Radio. If you are, brother, keep doing what you're doing. You got people that are with you. So, hey, keep doing what you're doing. Now, but did you have like a quick take on it, or just about, the whole effect and how people are responding to what he's doing, and how they tend to veer off the message originally, what he was trying to, basically the message that he was trying to spread.
Yeah, I mean,
how
I know
that. Topic.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yep.
Am I coming in clear? Go clear as I can. I mean, I think one more thing I wanted to point out, if y'all didn't already, was I do know that the media's goal, I'm thinking from observation, is that to really focus on him and try to get off the message. And I mean, I think that's pretty standard procedure as far as when anyone comes out and challenges any part of the system in any way, to start to try to discredit that person. So I know some of the tactics they use were that he became a backup, or he was struggling with some things, or I think even from an anti-black perspective, I'm not sure if some people think he may not be really a black person. I mean, I don't know. I know there's a lot of different things being thrown out there to kind of get off message of basically trying to produce justice. And so, I do agree that once you start pushing the justice conversation, you really start to shine a light on racism, white supremacy. You start to shine lights on whites who want to maintain the system, and also non-whites, even though they're victims, as far as them also, maybe some of them anyway, or a small group of them, maybe keeping some comforts, I'll put it that way. But that's a quick take on it. I know we have some time. So I'm sure we'll get just a little bit deeper on just how some of the other reactions from it. Because I know, I mean, you know, since we're in what you would call, I guess, a capitalist democracy or racism, however you want to frame it, I know that because it does impact economics, it also causes some social issues, obviously, as well. But from the from an economic perspective, I do know that it's a you don't really want to, even though I feel like it is a step or two down from the bigger system, looking at, you know, sports in general, how effective they are used as a distraction, by the distraction now being him taken away from the actual distraction of sports, you know, clearly going to cause a rift or ripple, I should say, in the system. So that's one reason why I know that they're trying to do. Matter of fact, it is affecting his career, because I know that it's possible that they may put him, they may start him or something. But since he's already hot right now, basically, you know, they're probably going to try to keep him, you know, as buried as possible. I will say one thing that was strange is that since he's trying to push justice, the only, I think, only reason why he possibly is getting some, he's not getting hit as hard, is because he's not attacking his military. So even though economics would be a big one, I think that, and they can manage it from a media perspective, I think a little bit different than if he was attacking the military. And I think if he was trying to produce justice and putting the military on trial, I think it would be a little bit different. But by the military actually supporting him, saying these are your rights, et cetera, within this environment, then, you know, it seemed like that started to pick up, give him a little bit of steam, a little bit of support. And it kind of took off from there. I think if he would have said, if he would have took it to the next level and said, well, the injustice that we're really having on this planet is warfare. You know, acquiring resources, dropping bombs, changing borders, you know, creating refugees, creating more violence, possibly even some proxy wars with Russia, maybe even dealing with some of the areas in what they call the Middle East. So I think by him not really hammering, saying, well, this nation isn't just as a whole. You know, this nation is a place that invades other places. I think that he may not even be playing. He may not even be on the team at this point. They may be trying to find some charges, some charges on him to get him locked up, for all I know. So I know it's a little bit more complicated, and I'm sure we'll get into more of it. But I just want that's just my two quick cents, not to be rambling too much.
No, you're good to go. You're good to go. I definitely like the point about the true purpose of military or militaries, and the reason why weapons are used, weapons of mass destruction are used to inflict and impose your will on people domestic and people that take up arms on other land masses all across the globe. And people have described themselves as nation states, and have also defined themselves based off religion. So that clearly becomes problematic when, you know, I follow the motto that the strongest religion on the planet is racism, white supremacy. And why do I say that? I say that because the group that classifies themselves as white have been able to successfully impose their will involuntarily on those that they classify as not white, and it continues on and on and on and on again, and it causes this mental schism between groups of people that are not classified as white, and then it kind of buries down into this dogma where you have a lot of victims that try to combat this system But if we have two different understandings about what we're doing here or what the actual system is, and some people think it's just education, some people think it's just police brutality, some people think that it's just basically white people not being ignorant about racism, white supremacy, which is the most ridiculous thing that I ever heard, because you cannot maintain a system that's this global, that's this purposeful, being ignorant about racism, white supremacy. They even know how to code their words. When you listen to someone like Tommy Loren, she goes on her whole spiel about, you know, oh, these people fought for the country, this and that other, and we still have you here, we still treat you in a certain way, when they other people, when they speak about other people in different kinds of context mentally, we're the ones confused about racism, white supremacy. It's not white people. So
Codebreakers have
go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm unable to communicate with you guys behind the scenes. So when you have calls, I may break in and let you know you have a call, and which you do. So I'm breaking in. But we do have a caller on the conference line. But as a veteran, if I may say that I fought for a GI Bill, and I'll leave it at that.
Yes, sir. Yep. So let's go ahead and get to the caller. Thank you for calling the Code Breakers. How do you want us to basically announce you, or do you just have a comment that you would like to share?
Hello, good evening. Thank you so much for taking my call. My name is Kia. I listen to the network from time to time. I think this is a good show. I think some things about his protest aren't mentioned, like, first of all, that he's from Milwaukee, and this protest started like 2 weeks after the Milwaukee stuff. And I don't know what, no one seems to put that together. Like, that could have been like the straw. I know he didn't say it directly, but it seemed like right after that happened, and his black family, whatever, because he moved there from California, could be there. He was like, oh, these people could really be my family that are getting affected. So that's one point that people don't, no one has seemed to bring up, I guess, because he was mostly raised in California.
Are you saying that Kaepernick is from Milwaukee originally?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
He was adopted, I think, and that family moved out to just according to Wikipedia, that family moved out to California.
Oh, okay.
He was born in that area.
Okay. Okay. Makes sense. Makes sense. Go ahead.
And then I know he wanted to talk about a lot of issues, and this issue he may not talk about because it's really personal, but transracial adoption and interracial, whatever, relationships, because where his white parents, whether birth or adoptive, standing up for him? Like, I read in USA Today, the adoptive parents, they still have their flag in front of their house, which is fine, but we decline to comment. All you have to say is, I'm proud of my son for exercising his First Amendment rights. You don't have to say you agree or disagree. And they just, like, it's like they forgot him. Like we adopted a black child, whatever, to be cute or whatever, but it's like they finally realizing he's black or something, and they don't know what to do about it. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Q&A queue is cleared.
You want to kind of like jump in, if you want to stay on the line and jump in, just feel free to do so, okay?
Oh, I'm sorry. I had already cleared the queue, so
That's fine.
Hit star six just, one again.
If they want to kind of like stay on, since you know maybe we don't have as many callers, they can't. I don't know. Do we keep? Is it open like to multiple calls, or is it just?
I can limited? However you want it.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, we're open to, you know, keeping them on if they want to kind of continue the discussion.
Just I would just say, everyone watch their background noise.
Okay, that'll work. All right, so I want to kind of move the conversation along a little bit. So Paradox or T, do you guys have any kind of comments for what the sister just shared?
Well, in respect to this is T, in respect to the fact that Kaepernick is exercising his First Amendment rights, it brings to mind, and if you do the research into Francis Scott Key, who is stated to have penned the so-called national anthem, the guy was an attorney in the city of Washington, it was called at that time, 1800s. And he was a large proponent of censoring people's First Amendment rights, especially abolitionists who were coming to D.C. at the time and petitioning Congress to abolish slavery. And there were actually a couple of cases that landmark cases that he was involved in regards to shutting down the press that these people, the people were putting out pamphlets, leaflets, speaking to the evils of slavery and why it should not be. And part of his claim, and if you look into a little bit more, there's obviously a deeper dive involved, but part of his claim was that these people were inciting a riot. And so he felt that, hey, in fact, this, if I'm not mistaken, this eventually led to what's called the gag orders, which came about in Congress. And the gag order essentially said, hey, these people, you can petition the government as per the Bill of Rights. You can petition the government for grievances and send us complaints about slavery. But you know what? We're not even going to look at that. We're going to table it, and we're just going to let it sit there. And this is how the gag orders came about. That's where that term comes from. So I think it's ironic that the same people that are espousing, the national anthem and how it should be respected, which is tied in with the flag, they're pretty much inseparable in that regard. I think it's ironic that, well, for one, that they're saying, you don't have a right to do what you're doing, Colin. But the guy who penned this song that's being sung with the flag waving or being stretched out over the field was against the Second Amendment. That was what he did. Or not the Second Amendment, the First Amendment. The other point I want to make is that the other irony in this is that the league is making a lot of money off of Kaepernick's jersey. We know that according to the reports that it's the number one selling jersey. Now, whether that's because people are burning it, which if anyone's familiar, have seen on YouTube, there are people who are burning Colin Kaepernick's jersey in protest of him and what he's standing for, or people are buying it in support of him. But that's just ironic that either way you look at it, there's still money being made by the same people that run the system of racism and white supremacy. So that's my point I wanted to make.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Paradox, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, so what say you about some of the sister's thoughts and some of the other kind of going on with the Kaepernick effect?
Her she made some good points. We can move on. I don't really have anything. I kind of let that stand out. I don't want to go too broad at this point with it. So what she said was pretty straightforward.
Well, let me say this, because there's some things that we're called the code breakers for a reason. So we want to kind of go into the thought patterns and some of the algorithms that are like normal for people to get into, and we want to kind of bring to your attention, the audience out there, some of the things that you may not actually think about on a regular basis, like terms that you would hear. America is a great country, right? So when someone says that, just think about really what someone is trying to say to you. Because at that particular moment, once they say that America is a great country, we're talking about the overall history of the country, and especially if you as a person that's been forced into the classification of black, right? Do rape, sexed in, sexed out, which means that you come from African lineage or native lineage here on this last landmass that was genocided out and sexed back in to the African population and white ancestors that raped black women on a regular basis in plantations. So just the point of order, I want to kind of give an illustration of how people speak about America and how things are taken out of context. Okay, 1619, people talks about the first slave brought here. Slavery began before then, but let's just go basically off what the common starting point is. 1619, okay, we're going up to 1865. We know that slavery did not end during 1865, during the ratification of the 13th and the 14th Amendment. We knew that they moved that to the so-called prison plantations that are now Peniche, and these are plantations that house free labor. Ava DuVernay, the great sister director that does Selma and the TV show Queen Sugar, is having the actual. I think it's on net. Is it on Netflix, Mr. Scotty? Keep me on right on this. Is it in October? It's going to be pretty soon. I think it's on Netflix and selected theaters, and it's going to be a documentary called The 13th Amendment. And I know this is right in your wheelhouse, Mr. Reed, about the 13th Amendment not basically freeing slaves.
October the 7th, again, the director is Ava DuVernay, the black woman who made the film Selma. The actual clip, the full, what do they call that, trailer? The trailer is out now. The name of the film is The 13th. So that's,
absolutely.
Yeah, The 13th. I think from based off the clips and seeing what she's tweeting about it and some of the promos that's been put out ahead of it and what some who have screened the film, it will show that slavery was never abolished.
And see, I want to go into the next clip right after I say this, but I want to kind of give people the illustration that people are trying to compare two histories. And see, when people say, well, America's great, America's this, America, look what you can do, this and that other. Now, you're talking about survival between chattel slavery from 1619 to 1865. And then they moved it to the prison population, which is still basically making slavery legal. It never was abolished. Okay? So let's talk about 1865 to 19 so-called 65. So that's 100 years right there. What are we talking about? Everybody that's on this line right now knows somebody that's born before 1965. What are you talking about? Great. Explain that to me. Give me some details of what you're talking about. Are you talking about basically, the freedom to sit up here and participate in economics and stuff like that, but still don't own anything? Okay. Is that what you're talking about? Are you talking about basically being the primary entertainment, being basically focused on through sex, being exploited through sex, being victimized and being stereotyped on a regular basis, where we would sit here and blame children in Chicago for this crime that goes on in that city, when you got Al Capone, when you got the biggest gangsters that basically made that city what it is? Are you kidding me? I grew up watching The Untouchables, Goodfellas, Scarface. Those were not black gangsters. So to kind of reiterate the point, Mr. Reed, this is a little bit longer clip, but we can probably like play this clip on out. This is Bomani Jones.
And, hey, DC, before he plays that, Mr. Reed, could you jump on to Skype chat with us so we can communicate? We can talk to the chat.
Yes, I'll open it back up. I had actually shut it down, but
I know. But I sent out a little group one for us three, so just so you know. But go ahead, DC.
Did you guys have any other comments before we get into the Bomani Jones? And he kind of goes into the history. He ties it together a little bit. It's a long clip, but after that, we can go into the break and then come back and then kind of really go into a deep construction about what this truly is and what Kaepernick is trying to protest. You guys have anything?
Only thing I'll say is that regardless of when we want to identify slavery ending or not ending. As far as treatment, we definitely want to distinguish, well, I'm going to distinguish the differences, because as violent as the prison system is, and we know it's about 1 million people, about 1 million of us, and it's more than that really when you add up the people who are being in and out, that number may be closer to 3 or 4 million in my mind, but just making sure how we want to identify that, but making sure that some things don't overlap, because plantations, being conquered and exterminated in what they now call Africa, dying on boats, being our women being raped on these boats, our men being raped on these boats, our children being raped on these boats by white people, coming over here 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 1900 and being ripped apart, our women being ripped apart, gutted. I don't even want to go down the list of atrocities that they did day in and day out. But I want to definitely make sure that we keep some things in this proper space.
As a 4-year abolitionist and producer of New Abolitionist Radio and a person who looks at the stories daily, I can 100% guarantee you those things are happening, and that's why we call it slavery. The rape, the beatings, the two children, the breakup of the families, we call when they snatch you out the hood, that's kidnapping. Uh-huh. Just like so I don't use that term lightly. It's slavery. Their constitution says it's slavery, so I'm going to believe them when they tell me it's slavery.
Yeah, it's mistreatment.
I'm going to push it a little bit more. Again, the treatment that happened during certain time frames for everybody, for percentages of people, I want to make sure we're distinguishing so people aren't, you know, confused. So if you're sitting in your house comfortable with your air conditioning on versus someone sitting in the prison, just making sure that those things are separate or clear, however you want to combine the two, because I don't really care about what pieces of paper say. Getting whipped, being beat by white people, even though it's happening to a percentage of us, I just want to make sure people understand, because if you're sitting in your house comfortable, regardless of who you are right now, that is a difference, I would say. I'm not sure how many black people in the 1700s were sitting around relaxing and watching television or sports. So I just leave that there.
I'd like to just make a quick statement. The 13th Amendment, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, whereas the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. So you see there how they transferred chattel slavery to the prison system. They pass laws and they can convict you of a crime. That's where they enshrined it, in the 13th Amendment.
Slave patrols. Now becoming police departments, modern day police departments. So I fall under I do understand the point that, of course, there was a lot more of a restriction or a lot more violence, a lot more clear distinction as far as black bodies happening during the so-called chattel slavery movement, pre-1865 slavery. I do like that. That was shared by Scotty Reed in the post-1865 slavery. So it did change. It did get more comfortable, but the suppression is still in place. So speaking on that,
it's the refinement process that I want to focus on.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
It's a refining process of how you're managing the Negro, how you're managing the black person, how you're managing the black population.
It's it's still
how the
body.
Different cycles, how the cycles, how it's still how body, it's, right. But my it's, point is that the reason why I want to be clear is because there's different things happening. It, you know, as they refine their process, it gets more complicated and it can get more confusing to people. And that's why I'm just making it as a discussion point. Is that do you continue to use certain language, or is it better to do it to where we're really identifying exactly what is being called and identifying things in pieces? Where during this time frame, this is how people were treated. During this time frame, this is how it refined itself. Because the prison process is a very intricate, to me, complex process, especially growing up in certain environments and having to deal with law enforcement and not understanding, you know, what it was. But obviously, even going back into the 1800s, from my understanding, some people wasn't clear that they were slaves. So it's I know it's complicated, is my whole point. So if you have someone in a time frame where it should have been clear that you was in bondage, apparently it wasn't clear to everybody. So I just want to make sure that we're using language that, and I'm not saying not using the word isn't correct, because I'm not here to necessarily, you know, make something manifest. So I just want to know, you know, just trying to push back a little bit on, you
no,
know,
right.
what
you're
language
right.
makes the most sense when you're being refined constantly. Does any of it cause confusion? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe you say it and people are like, oh, that makes sense to me. Or maybe you need to expose the complexity of how systematically a portion of us are being imprisoned directly, bondage, being bought and sold and put on the stock market, with how the prison system is developed, the purposes for how it's used, and then how does it, what does it do as they release people, what does it do to the rest of the population as we're being handled, and then also what's coming in the future as well. So I just wanted to just make it, just looking at it from that lens. But I'll leave it there.
All right. So if we want, Mr. Reed, do we have time for the third clip, Bomani Jones, and then we can go into the break after that?
I understand you guys had a little bit of a tough week last week. At least some of you did. Some of you were like, finally, this is what radio's always been supposed to be. I understand that some of you guys were like, oh, man, the Kaepernick thing happened. We want to hear what Bomani got to say about it. And then, you know, I wasn't there. I tried to give y'all a column, though. I went on TV, like, once or twice, you know, to deal with the thing. But the story kind of died. Not really died out, because this story's never going to die out, because this is going to be something that anytime Colin Kaepernick is mentioned, this is something that people are going to think about, and this is going to bring us back to the original place on this one. Now, of course, I have no idea the next time Colin Kaepernick is going to, you know, play, but, you know, this is the story. Now, the story has continued a bit because Megan Rapinoe at her club soccer match took a knee and then explicitly said that it was a nod to Colin Kaepernick. She had a lot to say on it. In part, she said that people were basically telling Kaepernick because he was black to stay in his place. She said that she, at times, had not felt as though she was part of the fabric of this country in the ways that she would like because she is a gay woman and she had felt those rejections. And so it made it such that she could understand where Kaepernick was coming from. And shout out to whoever told Kaepernick to do this. I think he talked to Nate Boyer about this take a knee thing, because somehow they found a compromise in this.
See, it's not really saying nothing about the troops, but I ain't really paying attention, so I'm going to just stay on my knees. And,
like, people seem to have found some level of peace with it. I also think people just looked up and realized there was nothing they could do about it at this point. By the way, college coaches, I don't know if you noticed, they are not having this at all. Not having this at all. My buddy Gary Parrish, he works on the ESPN radio station in Memphis, and he did a poll of college coaches about whether they would let a player do this. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, the idea and the notion that these guys think that they get to let somebody do or not do such a thing, right? Here's what I find interesting, though, about the Rapinoe situation. Now, I've had people who have raised the question as to whether or not what she did is being received differently because she is white. And the answer is yes, but in not the way I think that people would expect me to say yes. I'm saying that she's gotten a different reaction from people, but in a lot of ways stems from the same place. Because I checked her Twitter mentions, which was, you know, it was all the bad things that you would expect in part, but it was also a lot of people who, it's the same people who were in Paul Feinbaum's mentions after he apologized for that ridiculous thing that he had said last week. And they're like, don't apologize. You should never apologize. Like, basically the whole idea that in a town like this, white man ain't supposed to back down. And with Rapinoe, I think that she was viewed in a lot of ways in that same vein by a lot of people. Just the idea that you, as a white person, should not be supporting what Kaepernick is talking about, which is a fairly explicitly black cause or pro-black cause, for lack of a better term. So no. It ain't that she ain't getting hell for this because she's white. What's happened is Kaepernick kind of bust the door down on this one, and now it's reached a point where people have to try to understand where he's coming from. And the reason that people have to try to understand where he is coming from is because a lot of the things that people expected to happen have not happened, right? So when the first thing first came down with Kaepernick, it was the veterans, right? Everybody's like, think of the veterans. We have to think of the veterans. There was the one veteran, Shannon, I don't know if you saw him on Twitter, the gentleman who had his legs removed. And they showed him standing up in effect or whatever. And this whole thing was, this guy can't stand up, so this is why you should stand up. And then they basically mascotted this dude. And it made me terribly uncomfortable. I'm like, you don't give a damn about this dude with no legs. You just care about bashing Kaepernick. And so now you're going to take this guy and say you care so much about the veterans, even though we have a nationwide problem, which is we absolutely have let these dudes down. These guys who go on overseas to fight in Iraq and to fight in Afghanistan are coming back, and they are doing bad, man. They are doing bad. I talked to a guy I went to high school with. I hadn't talked to him in years. And he just hit me on Facebook. And I asked how he was doing. He's like, yeah, man, you know, doing all right outside this PTSD. And I said, so, you know, you're in Iraq. He's like, and this was his quote. He's like, yes, I saw and did some effed up stuff. Like, that was his quote. But a lot of these cats we see on the street asking for money and stuff like that, man, these cats have served, and they came back, and the world, they weren't ready for the world, and the world wasn't ready for them. Right? I mean, there are all kinds of things that you can look up and you can research, so that I would feel as though all these people who are saying, what about the veterans, if they really cared about the veterans in that way, they wouldn't be so silent about the things that actually happen with veterans. Like, why is now the time that all of a sudden you care about what's going on with the veterans, when there are much bigger things that you could be on with the veterans? Now, I'm not trying to be Mr. like, what about black on black crime, and make it analogous to what's going on with veterans. What I'm saying is, I think that people are absolutely being disingenuous about how much they really cared about the veterans, and how much it was they just couldn't believe that Kaepernick had the audacity to do what he did. But what happened as time went on, you had that veterans for Kaepernick hashtag pop up. And then all of a sudden you realize, wow, the veterans are not a monolith. And on top of it, it wasn't simply black veterans who were echoing where Colin Kaepernick was coming from. It was a lot of white veterans who felt the exact same way, right? There's some that felt the way he did. There were some who disagreed with him, but felt as though they served in order to protect his right to do such a thing. And they said they stood with him. And see, then once those veterans said they stood with Kaepernick, all of a sudden everybody had to fall back, because we were no longer talking about hypothetical people. Right? We were no longer in a position where we could simply construct a narrative and decide that everybody that was underneath it was somehow monolithically tied to one side or the other. Once that went out the way, all of a sudden people are like, yo, I think I kind of need to listen to what's going on here. So then people hit Kaepernick with the, well, I want to know what his solutions are. Now, never mind how disingenuous it is that people are cup checking him on this, right? They're like, okay, so since you care so much about this, I want to see you out here in these streets and doing something about it. Well, what do you know? Then he says he's going to pay $1 million, you know, donate $1 million toward the cause, right? Then he's meeting with Nate Boyer and talking about issues that relate to veterans. And then he's making phone calls to people on what he can do to make things better, right? He's like, what can I do to mobilize this cause? I got some momentum going on here. I'm trying to make something happen. Every time somebody's done some interview with Kaepernick, he's had something to say that was very direct and very pointed and very clear. And so after all that happens, then Megan Rapinoe happens, right? And Megan Rapinoe got something to lose, right? Because we think of her as a member of the U.S. national team. I don't know the name of the club team she plays for. Nobody thinks, none of us know that. None of us think about that. We associate her with the United States women's national team. And now she does this. And she is very much removed from the cause that Kaepernick is talking about directly. And now she's saying, white people need to be concerned about these causes too, because it's about America. It's just not about these people. And she says all the other things that she said. And now people have to listen. Or maybe they don't have to listen necessarily, but they're more inclined to listen, because a lot of the dismissals that you could make of Colin Kaepernick, you can't make of Megan Rapinoe, right? Now, granted, a lot of those dismissals I found to be disingenuous, right? Like, you can't, he's just about to get cut anyway. He just wants to get released. He just wants some attention. All these things and everything else that he said about Kaepernick, you can't really say these things about her. Or you could try, but it becomes a lot more difficult for you to do. It becomes a lot more difficult for you to sell. So when Rapino does this, it becomes a very interesting, like, signpost on where things have gone in the last week and change since this happened with Kaepernick. Because now what's happened is Kaepernick looked like an extremist before. Now what he's talking about has become mainstream. Now, not necessarily the view that he has, because it is not mainstream, but the discussion now has been fully mainstream. And one thing that Megan Rapinoe does is, I am certain that there are some white people who agree with Colin Kaepernick and what he's saying. Or if they don't agree, they understand where he's coming from and they respect his right to do whatever it is that he did. But they don't all want to say that around their friends, right? Because who knows what your friends are saying about Colin Kaepernick when there's no microphones and there's nobody to take dictation of what's going on, right? Because I think there are a lot of people who feel that way, where they have views they don't want to express, and they don't because in the name of peer pressure, right? Well, now Megan Rapinoe has said this thing, and now this becomes a totally different, a more open conversation, and it becomes a lot less, I'm on the side of the black people, and a lot more of, you know, I had never thought of it like that. Maybe I'll look into these issues, and maybe I'll consider them. And so for everybody who's like, you know, well, what's Colin Kaepernick going to do next? Stop and appreciate what Colin Kaepernick has managed to do thus far without really trying, by the way. Because it wasn't like what he did was a, hey, look at me move. We looked at him, but he wasn't begging us to look at him in the course of this process. But everything everybody's got to say about this, this has gone a really, really long way. And it appears to have some level of momentum. And to me, the momentum isn't about, well, there'll be more people who aren't standing for the anthem. I really don't care about that. I'm inclined to stand for the anthem if for no other reason than I don't want people throwing stuff at me. And people throw stuff at you when you don't stand up for the national anthem. I know an old head who was like, yeah, he used to not stand up for the anthem. He's got tired of people throwing stuff at him. So, like, the move or the progress isn't going to be, like, people not standing. It's going to be people who are bold enough to say that they see things that they think need to stop. And those people, and who then listens to them, and then what the mobilization is on this cause after the fact. But I think I've heard more productive discussion on issues of police violence and ideas of the American ideals and patriotism and everything else. I think I've heard more of that in the last week and change, productively, than I'd heard previously. And one last thing I want to say, though, before we go to the commercial break. And I think it's something that's very important to understand when people talk about, like, the American ideals and what Kaepernick was not honoring and what our soldiers fight to protect, which I think that argument has been extended way too far, right? Like, there's nuance to be had on what our soldiers fight for and what they go do that this isn't the best place for. However, one thing to remember about the American ideals is we've been trying to retrofit those ideals for a very long time. The United States did not become a legitimate democracy until 1965. That's when the Voting Rights Act was passed. And once the Voting Rights Act was passed, then you could argue there was legitimately full suffrage in the United States. You couldn't call this a full-on democracy until everybody could vote, right? And we didn't have that until 1965. The Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal. And by men, they meant men. And even more specifically, they meant white men when they were talking about it. Those are the ideals that we started with, right? And so we have a rhetoric that surrounds America. And what we're trying to do now is retrofit the multicultural place that America has become into ideals that were expressed with no concept or idea of women and non-white people. Right? We're retrofitting ourselves into these ideals. So when you talk about that these are the ideals that have stood for 200 years or something like that, that's not true. It's simply not true. There were words that made it possible for us to try to slide this back in, but we have been taking up for many years now trying to take the America that exists and make it more like the America that we talk about. And that's a very, very, very difficult job. And all kinds of people listening to me right now are probably fiercely disagreeing with that. But every time somebody forcefully tries to retrofit take our current America and put it into those old values, look at what the resistance is to the simple notion of adhering to these ideals that you swear up and down you salute that flag to represent.
We can go ahead and go on the break.
You are listening to Code Breakers on Black Talk Radio Network, new black media for the new millennium.
All right. All right, we're back. This is the Code Breakers. Dee, did you want to start it up?
Yeah, so that was I'm sorry, I have myself on mute. Can I be heard? I heard a little feedback, so.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, good. So that was Bomani Jones, and that he has this program that comes on. It comes on every week. Sometimes it doesn't, but he does. What is it called? I forgot what name of his program, but it's a very, very, very good program where he does commentary. He hardly talks about sports, so he delves into his thoughts about politics and kind of like some of the social things that are, some of the social happenings that are happening, out here in the world, and he shares his views. And I thought that he had a very, very, very good view, and it's called The Evening Jones with Bomani Jones. Shout out to him. Hopefully, check him out, because I think sometimes, from time to time, he shares some very good commentary about racism, white supremacy. Of course, he's limited in what he can say, because he is under the umbrella of ESPN, and shares that umbrella with one of our favorites, Stephen A. Smith. So let me not do that. But so what did you guys think about the clip? I know it was long, but I wanted to kind of give it its due, because he had a whole lot to say, and it really wouldn't have been able to get the point if we cut it and chopped it up. So did you guys have any kind of thoughts about the clip? I know it was a little bit long, though.
Do you have anything, T?
Not at the moment.
It was long, but I mean, he said a lot. One thing about him I will say I thought was interesting, even though it's something small, it was interesting when he had wore the Caucasian shirt versus instead of the Indians. He had the Caucasians with the big grinning, the big smile, the big cheese. On the white head, I guess you would call it, instead of an Indian head. That was pretty pretty uncomfortable for that sports network. So I definitely thought that was one thing that he did that was dangerous for him, probably. So, and I'm sure he definitely got pulled up for that, probably. But who knows? I mean,
Oh no, he definitely got pulled up for that. And in fact, he kind of went into a little bit of a discussion about it on his program, the Evening Jones, during that week, where he basically had the thought that, hey, what's the difference between putting so-called an Indian smiling and cheesing like that, than putting somebody on there that's called the Caucasians, when they're smiling and cheesing the exact same way? You lighten up the tone and you give the same kind of uniform, the garb or whatever, and hey, what's the problem with that? So basically he's trying to draw attention to how
racist this country is.
Well, not just that, but just the thought, just some of our thoughts. So
I would just say that what people have to understand is that, again, like I said, I'm not overly concerned about certain things when it comes to what's being said when it's not coming from a white person. What's funny about it is that by coming from him, looking at how uncomfortable they are. It's interesting because it doesn't matter about our comfort. He can show it to us and we can look at it and say, oh yeah, that's crazy, and that makes a lot of sense. But when you're getting them uncomfortable, that's when you can really feel the difference. But again, as the system refines itself, it almost seems like it will start to make some space for some things. So it's almost like, if you're thinking you're playing, using chess as, I guess, an analogy, but you're looking at playing a game and you're thinking to yourself, well, man, we can do this now. So as long as they keep moving, the goalpost or whatever you want to call it, it seems like, okay, he was able to do that, and they was
they put more people that look like you on TV or whatever, or you're able to speak out a little bit more and you're not being punished for it, it starts to feel like, you know, you're creating some solutions maybe, or you're creating what they use the word in progress. And so I just think it's a strange thing when even listening to him speak, thinking about the system that we're actually in, how those concessions can be made, and it makes you feel a certain way to keep you know functioning. I just think it's interesting because again, it seems like as you look at each layer, you get kind of down into the media world and look at how they do things. I mean, it's just it's amazing. I think years ago they would have got fired for that. You know? And so they definitely are allowing, for right now anyway, they are allowing a little bit more leeway, I think, to be able to do some things. So it's definitely to me a strange time, because you know he's able to even be outspoken. I mean, they're having so much. They're having more race conversations in sports than they do on national cable news. Just to show you how strange, or what place we've been, you know, what priority we've been put in, or what quote unquote minorities have been put into, where, you know, you have more discussion about our plight on the sports channel daily, almost it seems right now, the last 2 years, compared to the media that's talking about, you know, a lot of other things that's going on the planet. So, but I just want to say that we it's a lot to talk about. You can go ahead and get it going again.
Well, you have something to say? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think, Fred, to your point, I think sports is like the final frontier. I mean, if you look at the corporate media, their ad revenue is down and their viewership is down for their, you know, their Wolf Blitzers and their shows of that nature. And in fact, CNN and BBC, they do nature programming and cooking shows, things like that. So I think sports is one of the only venues where they've been able to capture a large chunk of listenership and viewership, and so they can reach a lot more people through those means. And so I think that's one reason why you're seeing it in that aspect.
And I will say that what's even more interesting is that when white people get bored, when they get bored or the numbers change or the ratings start to get flat and they got to do something new, it's going to be unfortunate for the people who are thinking that things are moving in a direction that doesn't really exist. And that'll also be interesting to study. Maybe the next 5 years, or maybe even less, when they start to widen up those sports channels again, and you know, slowly but surely it'll be less and less discussion, because one thing that it's exposing, I think, is. One thing I think it's exposing is, you know, maybe how bad it is if you're not paying attention, if you're not reading and studying, if you're just kind of a casual person watching TV. I mean, if you're watching that stuff, you can kind of see how it's happening every day, 24 hours a day. It's a constant press on us, you know, constantly being pressed. But as things change, from a media perspective, they change things constantly. So soon you may or may not see less of us, you know. Some of us will be upset about it and try to fight to get back on. But it's just interesting when I see something that's going on in that space when they control everything. So when they decide for you not to be on, you won't be on anymore, and these discussions will no longer exist anymore. So it's just interesting. But go ahead, DC.
Yeah. So let me give why I think it's this part of it is important, because I think. If we're trying to decipher thought patterns, the reason why it's this system is basically primarily outside of force being its primary impact, the impact is through the media and basically repeating things to victims of racism that we start to regurgitate. We start to believe in the things that we're seeing. That's the reason why advertisements are so important. Sports does that. So sports creates this kind of people get these teams, they get into these mental spaces where they feel it's personal. You see what I'm saying? And what Kaepernick is doing, even though he has mostly a lot of black players on the football team that will get killed by race soldiers in a moment's notice for acting out of line if they're not recognized by that police officer, he is doing something that's interrupting the mindset of the general person that is watching those games go on a regular basis. What do I mean by that? When you have a lot of people that are, because see, to me, the national anthem is like almost like a gospel song. I mean, literally, it has got to the gospel proportion. People automatically stand, they put their hand over their heart, and that's something that was started by Ronald Reagan, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right about that, Mr. Reed? No, it was started by Ronald Reagan. It was something that was started by Ronald Reagan, putting the hand over your heart, you know, swaying side by side and doing it at these football games and basketball games is basically showing your appreciation for the strongest religion on the planet, which is racism, white supremacy. So if you're defaming the flag, you might as well be spitting on a cross, defaming a cross. It's that deep. It's that serious. They have militaries built on this. So anytime there's something interrupts that, okay, so what's going on with this? Why is this person interrupting this? And then when he speaks on it and he gives that type of response to the reason why he's doing it, because justice has not been enacted within this particular country, that is basically hypocrisy, it's a farce. When he shines that light, it forces people to respond in a certain way. And I think that that's what I'm saying. It's like it's almost like on the Matrix, right? We compare racism a lot to the Matrix, right? Some people do. I know we had discussions about this before. So in the Matrix, right, when you have the agent, agents can walk around and kind of like, you know, everybody's acting a certain way, everybody's cool, everybody's walking around, everything is cool. But when they start to see a glitch in the system, what do? Agents, all of a sudden, they go to that spot and they attack. They get rid of whatever is basically interrupting the system. And I look at it the same way as racism. Racism, basically, it flows in a certain way, a certain kind of thought pattern, rhythm. I'm sorry, somebody was wanting to speak?
I said interrupting the programming. If you use the Matrix analogy, this is programming. They call it television programming, radio programming. It has that name for a reason. They use that term for a reason. And it is comparable, the analogy that you're using, with computer programming and writing a program to get you to act how they want you to act. If you look up what you're doing out there, is pledging allegiance. Look up the word allegiance. Now, they're asking white people to pledge their allegiance to USA Inc. and to die for it without thinking, without whatever. Now, for a black person, if you look up, and I may say this incorrectly, you know, in a dictionary, what does it have? Pseudonyms, or when
synonyms, synonyms and antonyms.
Synonyms. Yeah. Some of the synonyms for allegiance is obedience, loyalty. I'm trying to remember. But if you think about some of the letters in the way that racist enslavers wrote about their favorite victims, and they were a loyal slave, they were an obedient slave. And so to me, that is why they're trying to put so much pressure. I mean, I'm agreeing with you. The agents running in because there's something going on, somebody trying to interrupt the regular programming. Mm-hmm. But it also is forcing black people to be obedient slaves, in my opinion, just looking at the words.
And it becomes effective because that's the reason why you hear the word in a conscious community, agents, which I don't like to use because I think that anybody can be an agent in any time, place, or period. Sometimes some of us do it willingly and get paid for it, and some of us are involuntary agents. I just think that, you know, when you are basically under a brutal system mentally, I'm talking about the mental aspect of it now, that has basically suppressed you for so long that you have formatted a whole new way of thinking, a whole way new or relating to the system, which is racism, white supremacy. It causes these clashes within the groups that are being suppressed under the system. So that's why you get victims going at each other all the time about, well, no, I think that he shouldn't protest. I think he should. That's why you get these airtime discussions.
But do you think that if you had to put it on a scale of 1 to 100, what do you think this one particular so-called protest fits in the bigger scheme of things? How much of a threat to the global system do you think this one protest?
I will repeat what I repeated earlier. I gave my thoughts on that, what mm-hmm. I thought that the actual protest would do, and I think that's before you got on. And let me repeat, I do not believe that what Colin Kaepernick, the victim of racism, is doing right now is going to eliminate the system of racism, white supremacy. However, I do believe that what he is doing will basically shake, just to what Mr. Reed was basically stating here, it will wake up or basically at least elicit some thoughts to interrupt the programming that a lot of victims have experienced. Because you have seen people kind of have to talk about it, and then mm-hmm. when you start to talk about it and you start to kind of compare things, okay, then I did have a grandmother, okay, my grandmother is from, you know, North Carolina, she's from Louisiana, okay, so why did we move, why did we have to travel here? See, things start to kind of make sense because people just think that they just, you know, they from California, this and that, whatever they're from, and they think that this story of our families is not basically written with persecution along the way, and I think that that's what it's speaking to.
But do you think it gives us a chance from a code breaking, I think, view, gives us a chance to get to see the system really in action, like really getting a sense of how it keeps things in check? You know, it's a chance for us to really start to really, you know, it's happening all of the time, of course. But it does give us a chance, I think, to study the reactions to it, you know? So.
Yeah, this is almost like on a Neo level. Not quite, but, you know, like, you know, this was like a straight-up shootout. Like, if you look at the system as a whole, like, basically, like, we on a rooftop and, you know, Neo dodging bullets. That's, to me, that's Colin Kaepernick in the system of racism, white supremacy. Basically, when he was sitting in front of them and he basically calmly answered questions, they had mm-hmm. nothing for him. And then they just mm-hmm. shut it down. They just, okay, no more questions. When you can do
I don't think he's been interviewed. No, we haven't talked about that. I don't think he's been really interviewed since
then.
Well,
they have changed
locally or something, but they shifted, yeah.
They try to shift it on him. And then when they shifted on him, he always comes back to what his original point of protest is.
Well, they go to other things. Staying on code.
He right. stays religiously on the code. But see, that's what I'm saying. We go off, we veer off, we start talking about Chicago, which is not what he was protesting. We got the interrupters in Chicago. You got the 100. You got people on the ground that's already there in Chicago.
When the last time you gone there to Chicago
to do what? Come on, man. And like I said, it's already basically been discussed over and over and over again.
But see,
this is something new.
But like you said, another thing that it gets a chance really quickly to expose is what connective tissues do we really have? So do we think that this one particular event takes place, which grabs a lot of different people that are classified as black, and does this show to the dominant group, does this show that, okay, so are they together? Are they not together? Or does it show us how not together we are? I'm not saying that could ever happen or that would ever exist, obviously, but does it also show where we are? You know, is it a chance for them to run polls, to do studies, to kind of see, you know, as a whole, where is the Negro? Where are they? What's happening to them right now? How are they supporting him? You know, so I also wonder, is it a chance to see our loyalty? Are we still loyal to the system of racism? Because, you know, again, you know, a lot of the stuff don't matter. Flags and all that stuff don't really mean anything. It's just racism and white supremacy at the end of the day. So, you know, are we, you know, showing loyalty to whiteness? You know, and I wonder, do you get a chance to see that? Because what you notice, at least from some of the entertainers or whatever, that you're seeing people, they're taking sides, you know? It's like they're going and finding their white friends possibly and saying, hey, I ain't with that. I don't know what's going on. You know, that's crazy. You know, we even worried about ourselves. You know, whatever phrases that we come up with. It just shows a lot. I'll put it that way. It's hard sometimes to see some of this stuff real time. But anyway.
Agreed. So T, did you have anything that you wanted to share? Before I want to kind of like give at least a little bit of commentary, because we did have a presidential debate, if you want to call that farce or whatever that was yesterday, a debate. I'd like for us to kind of like go, you know, give a little bit synopsis on that. But before we kind of transpose off Kaepernick, did you have like any final thoughts on the Colin Kaepernick, the brother that's basically staying on cold and standing tall in the system of racism and white supremacy?
Yeah, sure. Let me close it out. I would say that the system and the controls of the system have already figured out how they're going to handle Kaepernick and what they're going to do. It may, you know, and I'm not sure that Colin has it. You know, when you plan, you're supposed to plan all the way to the end and not go beyond that. I don't know what his plan is in terms of, you know, because at some point, I mean, obviously his contract runs out, which automatically will take him out the huge spotlight that he's in to a larger extent. And I could just see Gabbard playing out the rest of the season, no matter how bad he is. Sort of like how they did Beast Mode, you know, with his protest, if you want to call it that, by not essentially speaking or repeating the same phrases over and over again, you know, and they got what they deserved in the Seahawks, and by, you know, throwing the ball on the 1 yard line instead of handing it to the best running back in the league at that time. And, you know, I don't think anyone can argue and say that, you know, that was not their motivation. But the NFL, you know, they can just wait them out. You know, just wait them out, and it'll be business as usual. BAU. Huh. So we'll see what happens.
We would definitely keep our eyes. Let me just. Go ahead.
I was just going to plug real quick that you can reach us on code_breakers1865 on Instagram. You can also email us at codebreakers1999@gmail.com, and you can hit us up on Twitter at codebreakers191, and we are on Black Talk Radio the first and third Tuesdays from 9 to 11, so please go to Black Talk Radio Network. There are definitely other programs on there that you can watch all during the week. Just wanted to say that. And go ahead, Dee.
No, thank you for doing that. And we also, you know, we welcome any kind of suggestions on how we can make the program better. If we are confusing, we do not want to cause confusion. Confusion is lethal. We do not believe in it. We want to be as clear, as concise as possible. And we want to try to get victims clear on how to combat or to do things that are counter to the system of racism and white supremacy. So
to help with that clarity, please go to producejustice.com. Mr. Neely Fuller did update his code books. So please go to that website, purchase his books. Very good constructive information as well, and you can track down Dr. Welsing's book as well, which is which books is it?
The ISIS papers, the classics.
The ISIS papers. Definitely get online and track that down as well. Maybe on Amazon or something. Is there any black bookstores that has a book that's online? I cannot think of that one guy off the top of my head right now. But anyway, if I can get it out, I'll post it. But I definitely, it's one. I can't think of the guy's name right now who has a lot of different books. But when we get, we'll tweet it out, so it'll be out there.
There's one in Baltimore called Everyone's Place. I know of that.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're in the area, in the Baltimore area, yeah.
If you're in the area, absolutely. Right on. Hey, Mr. Reed, if you want, you can go ahead and share that question on the air.
I'm sorry, it was actually three questions, and I'll just put them out there. And this is concerning Colin Kaepernick. Three quick questions. Is Colin's actions countering any element of racism? That's the question number one. Is Colin's actions countering any element of racism or the system? Is he engaged in counter-racism? Can what he's doing be classified as engaging in counter-racism? And lastly, does he have VGQ? That's the last question. Does he have VGQ? And what does that mean?
Well, I can go first on that. I say yes to all those questions, and I would say a resounding yes for the very last question. And the reason why I say that is very, very important. He did a lot of thinking about going on his own. This was not predicated on whether people was going to join him in this protest or not. He stated that. He made that very, very clear. And I think that that's very, very, very important for victims of racism, people that's forced into the classification of black, to remember. When you do things to counter the system, you can think of it as a way of basically your response to the system. And that you may be the only one that feel the way you do, or that want to, you know, do what you're doing and suffer the consequences. He was aware of what the consequences may be, and he basically was willing to go through with it. He thought that what he was doing was way more important, which basically answers the previous questions. But VGQ, especially because of his VGQ, of him going at it alone, allowed him to engage in counter-racism. Definitely he's doing that. And also countering the element of racism, which is the confusion part for me. That's the part for me. I think he's helping to alleviate confusion. You know, the bigger branch of what racism is, when it gets down to white people being white people, when they just go, you know, violent or anti-black all the way, we haven't gotten anything that can get to that yet, but we can start with confusion. That will go a long way to dismantling the system. So, yes.
All right. Did you want to transition over into the politics?
Did you have anything that you wanted to add to that, or no?
No, then we can move on to. I think you wanted to move on to the debate.
Well, quickly, Mr. Reed, did you want to add anything to that or give any kind of commentary? These are your questions, so.
No, I thought your answers were logical.
Okay, cool. So there was a debate yesterday between Hillary Rodham Clinton and Donald J. Trump. Of course, a lot of people are basically speaking about some of the things that was discussed during this interaction between the first female or woman nominee of a major party to be president and the first, I'm not going to say non-politician, because there was Ronald Reagan and a host of other white men that did become presidents that wasn't necessarily into politics, but he is someone that is not as experienced or part of the political apparatus. So this is a very interesting mix of ideals and ways to go at the system of racism and white supremacy. So when I watch this, I watch it strictly to see how white people within their system basically try to combat each other with their ideals on how they want to govern other people that they classify as not white. When I looked at the actual debate yesterday, there was a couple of things that kind of stood out to me. Number one, Donald Trump held back a lot. I mean, I know a lot of people think that he wasn't showing restraint, but you can see it on his face. I don't know if he's going to save it for if anybody disagreed, you can please feel free to share it. But in my humble opinion, he was very, very held back. I think that he was told that, you know, keep some of your hot takes for the second debate. Allow her to kind of come at you so you can kind of see exactly where she's coming from. Now, a lot of people looked at it a little bit differently. They looked at her as baiting Donald Trump, but I looked at it from the opposite view. I looked at it from the point of view that he wanted to see exactly how far she would go. Let her kind of like exhaust her ammunition, by the way, which I think she did, because she hit on a lot of stuff. She hit on the sexism. She hit on the so-called 1973 case that he had back in 1973, about the housing case that he had in California, if I'm not mistaken. She hit on his views on how women should be in certain kind of different places. So she focused on his weak points, and he just stood there and took it. And if you looked at the debate, he actually told her, I can say some things right now to you that's going to crush you, but I'm not going to do it. I may say it in the next debate. Did you guys see that? When he told her that on stage? I don't think I ever seen anything like that before. Because he's just looking at this woman like, you're no better than me. And one of the things that he's brutally honest, especially when it comes to business. Let me just get this out. When it comes to business, it looks like he's extremely honest about the brutal game what people call the business world, which is cutthroat. It's not friendly. He talks about winning at it, so he talks like a mogul. You know what I mean? Like anybody that's been around CEOs or people that are high up in these companies. These are not nice people. Generally, they are psychopaths.
But he's unrefined, you know.
Right, but
he's,
I'm saying
he's a bit unrefined, so you're getting a little bit more of the rawness of what you would get from, say, somebody who runs Facebook or something.
We
they're all just equally ruthless.
We have been around, right, where the higher ups will speak in a certain type of meeting environment where they speak freely.
They're codified.
Right, where they talk. I'm not talking about when they speak to like a large mass of people, but when they go into a leadership meeting or something to that effect. Where they can just basically speak about trying to control everybody else. See, they do all this nice talk for the masses, but when it gets down to the brass tacks, he's just peeling back the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I you know, do you pay your taxes? I do what I got to do. I mean, the man is basically up there telling you, I do whatever I got to do to kind of skirt.
What you're saying is,
I practice the laws that are actually currently on the books. If you wanted to change it, then you should too. And you do the exact same thing that I do. Stop lying. It's like he's unrefined, but it's wonderful to see because he's exposing the system for what it is. And that's what I want people to do. You don't have to have, oh, well, you know, we got to protect ourselves and I'm so scared. Look, Hillary Rodham Clinton is a racist. She has proven that. There ain't no question about it, how she feels about black people, black males in particular. Anyway, I'm done. That was some of my thoughts about it. And, you know, you guys can kind of give your thoughts. I just wanted to kind of get that out. Go ahead.
Trump is, you know, after so many years, because you basically have, let's look at what, maybe the last, I don't know, 12 years of presidents going ranging from Bush to up through Obama, right? If you look at the archetype of these presidents, like you look at George Bush Jr., he, for the most part, he was not well spoken, didn't appear to be up on most current events. It just seemed like a bumbling fool at most of his press conferences. Then the establishment put forth Obama, which, you know, very well spoken, very polished, very charismatic, and able to capture the ire of the crowd. Then, now they're coming back again after 8 years of Obama. They're coming back now, and they're coming back with the rawness, and that's what you're getting in Trump. And people love it. They're eating it up. And so, you know, while it might appear, you know, it's what we talk about all the time, how confusion is one of the main things, weapons that they use against everyone, especially those classified as black. And so what you have is the dichotomy between Trump and Clinton. Clinton very polished and almost to the point of phoniness, because, you know, the establishment recognizes that people are becoming more and more distrusting of politicians, specifically lifetime career politicians. So they put someone like Trump in there who most people wouldn't consider him to be an insider, although he is to a degree. And he has no cut cards. He tells it like it is. And he actually, his way of thinking and his way of lack of PC is how a lot of Americans think, especially especially those classified as white. And so it's actually an ingenious plan. I don't know exactly what the outcome will be, but I do foresee Trump taking the presidency. And you even have, you know, I go out there and listen to various other programs, especially those that are non-black, and you got people on there advocating for armed revolution if Hillary gets into the White House. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, all I say is just get ready, like T.O., get your popcorn ready, and be prepared for anything to happen, because as we've seen time and time again, when things take a turn for the worse, there's always the people classified as black, as non-white, that catch the most.
That's good commentary, T. DC, you said a lot. You said a lot, man.
I could have said more. You know, I had a whole. Man, please. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll try to keep it brief. Is you know, you're really, you know, people can really get a chance to see, you know, very easily, because you're not in boardrooms and other. A lot of us don't have access to white people, especially at those levels, and so you're getting a glimpse, I think, of what it means to be white. Things that we've always talked about, nothing really new, is that you can be white and be come off any type of way you want to come off, is that you're in charge. Your people is in charge. So if they like it or like it, it doesn't really matter what you know, what you don't know. We're seeing again, we're seeing it again. Matter of fact, I always think it's interesting that when you look at President Obama, labeled as a black person, how white men talk about him. You know, he thinks he knows everything. Who does he think he is? It's strange.
Uppity.
It's strange. It's not strange listening to it, knowing a little bit of history, but not thinking about history, just looking at things real time. It sounds strange. But this time around, because you had black people at that level being discussed, you get an easy chance to see what this country's built on. And you know, looking at different presidents historically, not a lot of them are impressive people, but it doesn't really matter about that. And I think that people get confused. I guess you don't really get confused. I think some people are told that if you're not white, you got to work 10 times harder because it's their system. So you hear about it, but it's never really, it's almost, you know, we've conceded, well, clearly we conceded, but, you know, you know, I say it this way, you come up, a lot of people can grow up, depending on your environment, very bright-eyed in a sense, where no matter what struggles you went through as a teenager, no matter how the system treated you, the way you're being conditioned, in some cases, in some instances, you know, you go into the world thinking that things are a certain way, and then someone, you know, rub you on the shoulder, you know, taps you on the head and says, oh yeah, by the way, you're not white, without saying that, obviously, in some cases, but you're not white, so you know, you have to function and you have to operate this way, all at the same time telling you that racism don't exist, right? Telling you that, you know, slavery happened a long time ago, telling you that things are different now, or we came a long way, whatever that means, but you know, you're told these things, and it becomes very confusing because you know, once you get a little bit of vision, you know, you start to see the process of how you become assimilated. Being, you know, from thinking that you deserve to be locked up, you know, thinking that what you did was wrong and that it's your fault and you should have made a better choice and it's on you. And you find out, or in my opinion, you know, I believe that's the furthest thing from the truth. I think the system obviously produces, you know, these behaviors and handles you accordingly. And I think that may be a little bit complicated. But anyway, looking at Donald Trump, you're really getting a clear vision on whiteness. You're really getting a clear vision on what it looks like when white people, a portion of white people, have decided that the whole politically correct, or the whole we're going to bite our tongue even a little bit on dealing with non-white people, we're tired of that. We're bored with that. Yeah.
Paradox, I just want to get this in, because I think right here during your point is very, very apropos. What was the main thing that Dr. Welsing wanted people to understand about when what white people would do, or what white people would say? What is the first thing that she would say when people had relationships with white people? What was the question that she used to say? And this is shout out to the people that used to go to the Welsing Institute, Blackburn Center, Howard University. We studied under the tutelage of Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. what was some of the main, what is the main thing she used to tell us every time that we was in her presence about what's the question that we should ask white people?
Man, do you remember? Two questions.
Let me help you out, because every time I watched Trump, it kept coming up in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Ask the white person that you're closest with, and I will put this out to the audience.
It just came to me, right.
Do you talk about when there are no black people around? You remember that? She said every time that would stump that white. But see, what Trump does is peel the curtain back.
Well, you don't have to ask. He's telling you.
He's looking at her side eye. Like, come on, man. Like, literally, like holding back, like looking at her, like, are you for real? Are you serious? You gonna sit up here and lie to black people like this? like you acting like you really love them? And he gets into these talking points because they make him do it. But when he told her, I can actually, like, he paused, he stopped, he looked at her, I can actually say something right now, but I'm not going to. It's so disrespectful. it's so because I know they was telling him, do not do it. I don't care how much he based you. And it just shows whiteness. It's just like a complete circle. You're looking at it. You're looking at the household. You're looking at the plantation. You're looking at the dynamics of how to deal with those they classify as not white. So these would be basically tenuous discussions. Now, you act like you would think that these people don't know each other, that they never been friends and they never been in the same presence together. Like, they never ate dinner together, right? You would think these folks never actually chopped it up, right? Right or wrong? Like, they Bloods and Crips. Like, I see you on the street, you got blue right. on, I'm gonna lay you down.
All right, now they're friends.
No, they had congressional dinners. He gave money to their campaigns. Mm-hmm. Come on, man.
Well,
come on now.
Even MSNBC, he knows this woman.
He knows this woman. He knows her. That's what I want people to understand. We're the code breakers. We're not here for the food. We're not here to try to create no kind of illusion. We're not going to continue the dogma. You know what I'm saying? We want you to see, okay, they took pictures together, they sat down, they chopped it up, they broke bread. Think about that. He gave money to the campaign.
Yep. We got about one minute left.
Yeah, no problem.
That's
why that man can look at her side eyes like that and basically be like, I know you. You tripping. You ain't serious. Why are you lying to these people like that? I know how you feel about black people. Think about that.
And it's not only how you feel, it's really what you have done to black people. Forget the feeling part. You know, the things you've done.
My God. Woo. Who has done more to black people? Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton?
Oof, that's a tough one. I'm gonna go with Hillary and her husband and the rest of her ilk. All the people that they've employed in laws and bills that they've passed to maximize punishment on us. So.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. Hey, do you have any final thoughts, T, before we get up out of here?
Yeah, I mean, you all definitely hit it on the head. I just think it's funny too that quickly here that Hillary, that Trump even was mentioning the stop and frisk thing. You know, if he's trying to capture the black vote, you know, how he went into that whole spiel and had no qualms about it.
Nope.
Like, no, this is what it is. Make, you know, it should have held up an appeal, and we should have continued to.
If any of us step out of line, we're not even considered anything. Right. Put them away forever. That's how he said it. These people are hurting black people. I'm like, you talking about black people hurting black? What are you talking about? But anyway, we got to touch on this maybe in a couple of weeks, so finish that up.
All right. So thank you for joining us. This has been the Code Breakers. I am D.
This is Paradox.
And P.
Until next time, peace.